Over the years, the ownership of the Croom estate has changed several times. The 9th Earl of Coventry, who died in 1930, had placed his property into trusts which were owned and managed by the Croom estate trustees. As our story unfolds, you'll hear how they sold the court and its immediate surroundings in 1948, but they kept much of the remainder of the farm and woodland estate of almost 14,000 acres, the largest in Worcestershire. Central to life on the estate were horses and the Croom hunt. Lady Maria first hunted when she was 3 or 4.
I used to be on an old pony of my sister's. And then when they moved off up the bank, I got bucked off and was hung upside down by one foot. And the pony had a very happy gallop up to the church.
But it didn't put her off, and she hunted for many, many years. Sir Jerry Wiggin recalls when she was literally out till dusk.
The thing I remember about Maria was that she used to hunt the Tuesday country, which was across the river, and she used to do it all on horseback. She had no horse box, and she used to come all the way. And the first person I saw to put a light on her boot, much admired at the time, but it used to take her 2 or 3 hours to get home, so she needed that.
Valerie Rymal's family farmed on the other side of the river, and she recalls the hunt crossing the Severn on the Pixham ferry.
My father loved hunting and did a lot of hunting with the Croom hunt. I can remember the hounds would come over, sometimes with Lord Coventry and the hunt staff, and they would take the ferry from Pixham over to Cleveland with the horses and hounds. They would come to Newland, where I lived, and would stable the horses and hounds, come in and have breakfast, and then hack back to Croom Kennels through Madrasfield and up to Nonseven. And I always remember there was a show at Madrasfield, and Jack Gittings, who also farmed on Croom Estate, was going to the show and took two hunters over on the ferry, and the one jumped off the ferry. Fortunately, he was able to hold it, and it swam beside him to Cleveland. Well, fortunately, there was someone there who met him and helped him out of the river with his horse. But I cannot remember the ferry boat, actually, but it was used a lot in the 30s, obviously.
During this era, Beryl McEwan's father was the Croom Kennel huntsman, and she grew up surrounded by hounds. To this day, she has a fear of dogs, and she thinks this is down to a very early experience.
When the bitches whelped at the puppies were first of all kept in little huts which were in a fenced up area next to our garden, quite close to us. But then when they got to the stage where they could go outside, they were taken out and put into little pens out in the field. And if ever we had visitors, people came for tea on Sunday afternoon, my mother and father would take them out into the field to go and look at the puppies. And apparently, although obviously I can't remember it, when I was a babe in arms, they were taking some visitors to see the puppies, and the bitch took exception to this and nearly bit my foot off. And I'm sure this is worry. I was always afraid of these dogs. And it was a nightmare for me in the summer months when the bitches were out in the field, and I'm sure they couldn't do any harm, but I hated it when they came anywhere near me.
Several of our interviewees recall the spectacle of the hunt meeting at Croom. In the 50s, Marie Passy worked at the school, while Mary Evans's father was the huntsman. Both vividly recall the opening meet.
The best view of the lot was down the white gates by the dry arch when the hunt always came, and they all came up the field right up there. That was something to remember. Then stand up all on the top and have their drinks, and away they went. And then we used to go up and stand on the ha-ha, and you could watch them go into Dunstall and see the fox as well. Once he got in the gardens and he got up on the top of the wall, and the hounds couldn't get to him, and he stayed there for ages. In the end, they got him down. He jumped in the middle and went.
The opening meet was always held on the hill at the top by the church, and when the Air Force were there, they used to host the meets, and a group captain would come out with the drinks. And at the time, there was a couple of ladies that used to ride side saddle, and it created a wonderful scene as they moved off across towards Lickmore, that's over towards Purton, and the hunt was riding across the hill. When we stood on the hill by the church, because I wasn't riding in those days, later in life I had a pony and was able to follow, but then you'd see all these people in their finery and riding side saddle going across the hill towards Purton, and it did make a lovely scene.
An equally memorable scene for Maurice Sherwood was the annual hunt ball held at the court in the summer months.
It was a very, very busy time. Mother would go and work there for hours. We'd never see her for the next morning. And every part of the staff was involved in either cooking or serving. In the summer, Paul, you see all the people walking outside with their DJs on in their long dresses, and they would walk down by the river across what we called the Rickety Bridge, which was a little bridge down from the court to the right. And seeing these ladies with their long dresses and the men in the DJs, it was summer evening, it was lovely. And there would be so many cars or vehicles, and they weren't parked in those days in order. They were just parked, crammed on the front of the court, and my stepfather had to walk with his bicycle out above his head to maneuver amongst the cars. And it was that sort of life. And you'd hear the super dance bands of the day, of the music of the day, coming from the court. Even then I would creep up in the dark and just listen to the music wafting out from the court, and it was like it was a storybook.